Well, g'day and welcome back for the final episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report for 2025. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian livestock industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives, such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps, may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. This is our last episode for this year. I'm going to focus on a couple of things, but it's really about a year in review of how 2025 has performed, how I've seen it. I'm going to mention three key factors that I think have been quite defining for this year. They're all local aspects. I haven't included factors outside of Australia, but three key big moments that have mattered. I'm going to look at supply, production, exports, prices, but I'll also touch on confidence and sentiment around the marketplace. It's such a big driver nowadays of price performance and overall sort of how the market's feeling is probably what I'd say. But I think it's important to recognize confidence and sentiment. And, you know, it's probably not something we talk about enough and analyze and consider, but I think it's worth touching on. To wrap up, I look at my views and give my views on where I've seen this year perform and how I think it's worked out. But to start with the big moments, and this is Australian specific, the first one, which I think has been the biggest thing of this year, or the biggest defining factor of this year, was that rain in late March for pretty much the majority of Queensland, right down into central New South Wales on the back of Cyclone Alfred. That system was season and market defining. We can't ignore or escape the fact that there's still producers in Western Queensland recovering from those floods, but on a broad general level, the influence that that rain system and event had on the market and its capacity to inject confidence and the willingness to act with confidence for the at a producer level throughout this year, knowing that a season was basically assured, has been a real game changer. And I mean that across the board, not just for the New South Wales market, but also not just for the Queensland market, sorry, but also New South Wales down into Victoria. The influence obviously northern buyers had at weaner sales and sales subsequent to that rain has been a really significant influence. The second one was that market rally in the middle of the year. Really started in June and peaked in the middle of September. You know, prices lifted anywhere from 30 to 50% to rise above five-year averages. Really driven by that seasonal aspect and the strength of conditions north of Dubbo and that encouragement the season gave to producers to retain stock and add weight. You know, there was no pressure to sell. It was sell when you choose. And the flow-on effect from that luxury of knowing the season was behind you has really created additional competition and demand for cattle because people could sell when they wished. But alongside that, that positive season collided with this intense demand out of southern Australia, south of Dubbo, which we hadn't seen in such a widespread nature before. You know, and that's across both feedlots and processors, but that demand has really collided with the winter rain we saw, coupled with the March rain, that really supported improved demand for cattle, and that additional competition really drove market performance and that rally in the price. I think the last one to remember, you know, I've spoken about weather twice already in these big moments for 2025, but what I think the last quarter of this year has really reminded us about is how much of an influence weather has. September, October, dry, markets soften. Rain in late October, November, markets kick to their highest level since 2022. Dries out across central New South Wales into southern Queensland. Markets are now coming off the boil. This year, or this last sort of 3 to 4 months of this year, have really been a good reminder of how significant the weather influences price. We can talk about global demand and how much interest there is in Australian beef until we go blue in the face, but ultimately we've got to remind ourselves that weather is king and how much it affects local supply and demand is really paramount. And I think the last 3 to 4 months of this year have provided a really good snapshot of that. I'll get into supply now though, but I had a look at the numbers today. Yardings, so national cattle yardings, have reached their highest levels for 2025 before the year's officially ended since at least the year 2000. And they've well surpassed 2015 volumes, which was the previous high in national cattle yardings through the sale yards. When we compare it to, say, 2022, which was the depths of the rebuild, national cattle yardings have risen by 72% or 1.52 million head in the space of 3 years. It shows you how significant the increase has been. And then we look at feedlots, record capacity, record numbers of cattle on feed, record grain fed turnoff, and then move to the processors. Year to September, official ABS data indicates that our slaughter numbers are at their highest year-to-date levels since 1978. So they're in front of 2014, 15, and 2019, which combines with that feedlot influence I've been speaking about and obviously yardings as well. So there's a few numbers in there, but what does it actually mean and what does it tell you? I've been sort of raising this a number of times this year, and I stand by it firmly, is this data, and you talk about, you know, near on record cattle yardings, record data through, or record throughput basically through the feedlots, and then 50-year highs in slaughter numbers. What it tells you is this growth in the cattle herd and sort of 3 to 3.5 to 4 years in rebuild to expansion in the cattle herd is coming home to roost. And we're seeing that in high supply right across the board. It's not just one part of the supply chain that's seeing increased numbers. It's right across the supply chain. And I think when we consider it for 2026, we're going to see similar results, if not better, across some of those key metrics. And it'll be interesting to look back on it in 12 months and to consider what I've said today and consider the numbers to see where we get to, because I've got fair confidence that we're going to see strong results again next year and some improvements in some places. Off the back of that data, though, I think when we look at beef production and beef exports collectively across a number of different channels and facets within that space, this year is going to shatter just about every known record that we've ever set for beef production and exports when the final figures are released in early next year. At a top line, slaughter volumes will be at 10-year highs. We'll have record beef production. We'll have record beef exports. Grass-fed exports will be their highest level in a decade. We'll have record grain-fed beef production, record cattle turnoff from feedlots, record grain-fed exports, record chilled exports, and record beef exports to the US. Just on their own there, it shows you how significant 2025 has been in terms of performance. As I started, every known production figure, be that local or export volumes, are being broken in 2025. And when we consider that compared to 22, when figures were at their lowest on record, it shows you how quickly the industry can turn around and change. I want to mention demand, and off the back of this, I'll get into sentiment, but the ebb and flow of the market and the way prices actually perform has such a big or demand, I should say, has a such a big effect driven what I meant to say was the ebb and flow of the cattle market has such an immense amount to do with the weather, and particularly sort of off the back of that, how producers feel and their confidence and sentiment in the marketplace. And, you know, when we look at how this year's performed particularly, a really big driver of the market performance has been that wetter than average winter for, you know, large parts of sort of northern New South Wales, north of Dubbo into Queensland. It really supported demand for light cattle. And off the back of that, you know, producers' interest in a sort of short-term trade moving into your peak grass production period in spring was really supported by that wet winter. And, you know, we saw a really strong response in terms of restocker prices between June and September off the back of that wetter winter in areas that carry a lot of cattle. Also, you know, not just natural grasses, but importantly, carrying cattle on oats. Moving to the feedlot sector in terms of demand, when we think about the feedlots, numbers of cattle on feed have lifted by 50% or over 500,000 head in the past 5 years. And that influence of expansion is well and truly coming home to roost. And you can see that in how feedlot prices have performed this year. When we compare numbers on feed, which has grown by 50%, relative to capacity, capacity's only lifted by 20%. And what that tells you is feedlots are increasingly placing heavy pressure on ensuring every pen is full. And the utilization rates within their yards are operating at optimal capacity. And I think there's an obvious reason for that, and that's efficiency and ensuring that full feedlots gives you the best return on investment in terms of capital and things like that. But it gives you a good idea in terms of the difference in growth. So numbers on feed lifted by 50%, but capacity, which is the available space for a feedlot, only lifted by 20. And it's obviously clear that over the last 5 to 6 years, feedlots have made an increasingly concerted effort to ensure that their yards are full and pens are full. That demand, through recognition of ensuring capacity is high, has really supported, you know, improved competition from feedlot buyers. And that's not just specific to the heartland of feedlots in the country, northern New South Wales, southern Queensland, but that's right across the board. And what that's done, that additional competition alongside the expansion and the necessity to ensure feedlots are full, has meant that this colliding of both expansion and the recognition for higher utilization rates from southern Australia right through to the Downs has really supported competition and demand for cattle. In addition to that, ration prices and particularly grain have been reasonably ordinary in 2025, to put it plainly. Prices haven't been very strong at all. And what that's done has it has given some kind of a relief in terms of offsetting high cattle prices for feedlots to remain profitable. Moving on to the processors and where their demand levels have sat this year, the expansion in southern Australia, both through higher numbers of labour units, but also importantly investment and expansion in the actual asset itself or in the facility, has ensured, you know, a lot of increased demand that we haven't necessarily seen before out of the south. I ran some numbers. Victoria's capacity has increased by 21,000 head a week in throughput since 2022. So in the space of 3.5 years, roughly, between March 22 quarter and September 25, Victorian cattle throughput numbers, process numbers, have increased by 21,000 head a week. So we're looking at 100,000 a month or $300,000 a quarter. Not an insignificant figure. And that expansion has really driven some serious competition, not only, you know, in their local markets, but obviously the highlight of this year has been seeing the demand from the southerners in northern Australia, and that massive pull of cattle out of the north, backed up by conversations that I've had with the market. You know, the marketplace has never seen the demand from Victorians and southern buyers or processors for kill cattle than they have in 2025. It's a really good example when you combine, you know, anecdotal conversations with the increase in throughput to the tune of 21,000 a week out of the south, that they're additional cattle that they're processing, to really show you how strong the demand is. I mentioned and spent a bit of time laboring on it earlier, but I think it's important to recognize confidence and, you know, the bearing confidence and emotion now has on cattle markets and livestock markets in general cannot be understated anymore. It's no different to equities markets. It's no different to bonds. It's no different to FX. It's increasingly through, you know, our StoneX network, we're hearing more and more in other marketplaces how much, while the markets and commodities, how much of an influence emotion has. And I've picked out five times this year that really highlight how significant that sentiment shift can affect price and performance. We think about the first quarter of 25, really up till the middle of March, conditions were getting reasonably dry across regions north of Dubbo. The north had properly missed out on a wet season and it had a lot of people worried. We then got that rain in mid to late March and that changed the game for the entire year, but it really changed the game in terms of underlying demand and confidence around the outlook, which is obviously supported by sentiment. We then saw that massive influence and attraction from northern producers for southern cattle to trade and background throughout this year, and that demand was really solid and the outlook was relatively optimistic. We then saw a winter through northern New South Wales into central New South Wales prove to be above average and quite positive. That supported demand for cattle to go on oats, you know, mid the way through their growing season to then chase cattle and put on a short-term trade to be tipped out before the end of the year. Again, a weather event has driven an uptick or a shift and a market shift in demand. We got to September and October, dry weather and dry weather encroaching right through central New South Wales into southern Queensland, sort of hastened a sell-off of cattle and in turn, again, has shifted the emotive or the emotions of the market. And it pulled confidence from producers relatively quickly. The spring growing season was extremely short and, you know, you could feel the market getting worried. I could feel it and sense it myself. We got to late October, mid-November. Rains really then kicked the market back into gear. Prices rallied to their highest level since 2022, surpassing where they sat in September, less than 2 months ago, and producer confidence subsequently rebounded on the back of that rain. It gives you an example of how much sentiment can shift at the producer level and more broadly, because sentiment at the producer level affects supply, but it does show you how significant a factor sentiment is. I don't need to go into details about 2023 and I don't need to go into details about 21-22 when the cattle market went sky high off sentiment and a lack of supply. But my point is, it really shows you how strong confidence is and the effect it has on price performance. And mentioning price, I think this year's really been defined by two halves. The first half of 25 up until the end of June, markets were relatively stable. You didn't see a lot of movement in price. There might have been a 50 cents a kilo band across most categories, both direct and through the yards. But we've gotten to the second half of this year and volatility has returned with a vengeance. It's really picked up in terms of how much the market's moved from its low and high point in the space of sort of 3 to 4 months has been a significant shift. when you look at prices more broadly, they're all performing very, very well, sitting well above five-year averages. And some of them, cows is the best example, at record highs in the yards this year. Same with direct-to-grid rates, driven by that intense competition and interest in supplying the US trim market and the value that can potentially be extracted out of that trade. Cow prices themselves, between their lows in May and their peaks in November, they've experienced the sharpest rally on record between those 2 points, risen over $1.50 a kilo live weight, which converts, if you're looking at 50% dressing percentage, to $3 a kilo carcass weight, or 63% they've lifted between their lows and highs this year. I don't think I've seen the cow market as volatile as what we've seen it in 2025. The sale yards particularly, less so at the grid level, but the volatility's been exceptionally intense. And I think when the market, local market, livestock market, wakes up to the Brazilian influence, which is going to be very much felt in 26 in terms of our competition with the US, we should expect to see more volatility next year. The thing about prices this year, considering all that supply information I started with, you know, record high yarding numbers and record numbers of cattle going through feedlots and 50-year highs in slaughter numbers, the expanded capacity in the supply chain has really underpinned and supported this improved price outcome. Now, that's alongside seasonal conditions in the major cattle regions of the country. Let's call that north of Dubbo to the Cape and across to Darwin. The positivity of seasons alongside this high capacity of both feedlots and processes to handle more numbers has really created the perfect storm for this price to lift so substantially. I think it says a lot about how the market's performed and particularly how the cattle cycle operates when we look at where markets have, or by category, where markets have performed this year. And I want to focus on feedlots and processes. They've had the biggest improvement in price terms year on year and relative to the last couple of years. It gives you a great idea that the demand and the interest in stock in terms of where the cattle cycle is at because of supply is with the feedlots and processes. Think about the restocker job. It's improved, but nowhere near as substantially as the feedlot and processor markets. What does that mean? Well, the demand at the restocker level is, let's call it, subdued, even in really strong, large cattle producing regions like Northern New South Wales and Queensland, because there's enough cattle on farm. The herd size is large. The necessity to compete for stock is not there like it was in 21-22. Whereas feedlots and processors have a large availability of cattle around them, but coinciding with that, they also have increased capacity and increased space to facilitate and deal with those numbers. It just gives you a bit of an indication of where the market sits and where the cattle cycle is at, and I think we'll see that again in 2026. I mentioned it at the start, but I think it's important to recognise where things have gone wrong. I've said a couple of times this year that I've taken a view on the market and it hasn't always worked out, and I'm happy to admit that I'm wrong. I think the first one I'd start with is I thought cattle prices would peak in sort of mid to late winter, July into August, and ultimately cattle prices reached their peak in November. So I was well out there, but there's a couple of things which hindsight's a beautiful thing. When you consider that, where I've underestimated and gotten that call wrong, the first one would be the willingness of southern feedlots south of Dubbo to buy your traditional 100-day flatback feeder cattle and truck them from Julia Creek into southern New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia to feed. I didn't think that would become a reality, and it did. And that competition from southern markets, or southern buyers, I should say, alongside this additional capacity in the system from your traditional buyers of those cattle in the north, collided, which really forced that market to rally a substantial amount in a very short amount of time. I also underestimated the influence on that March rain in Queensland. I believe that we'd see a more genuine, consistent selling pattern, but with the producers' confidence in the season, knowing that they had grass in front of them and they weren't a forced seller, that factor really supported price performance because they could somewhat dictate supply and marketings of stock. I'm happy to admit I was wrong in both cases. It's been a really interesting learning curve for me this year to see how both of those factors have influenced price performance. And, you know, it's a good learning curve, particularly in terms of the South and their willingness to buy cattle, but also importantly that Queensland situation. I didn't think they'd be so comfortable not selling like they have. But it's a good reminder that Queensland's a big paddock, and when they don't need to sell, they won't. And if they can offload at a time with more weight, they will. My concern still stands, and I've mentioned it earlier this year and have rattled on about it a bit, the potential issue for dry weather to encroach into the east, into the major cattle regions in East Australia and northern New South Wales and Queensland, and what effect that dry weather can have on the market, particularly for producer sentiment. But I mentioned it a couple of episodes ago about capacity. Probably more so now is the ability of processors to handle those high numbers with where the herd's at. The export job. Trump's tariffs in April for the world and mid-July for Brazil, they have been really supportive of how our market and how our exports have performed in 2025. I think it's well documented that, you know, the globe is dealing with a protein shortage. We know that. But I think you couple that protein shortage with where Australia's at, in terms of our cattle cycle, is we're producing record volumes of beef and exporting record volumes. It's put us in a really, really healthy position. We've got to look back at the last 5 to 6 years to then understand where we are now. And we've lost a lot of market share to the US and other competitors like New Zealand and Brazil and other parts of South America between 2020 and 23, when our cattle prices got to the most expensive in the world. We didn't have a lot of beef, and our major markets and others looked elsewhere for product. Things have turned around, and we're now seen as the most reliable, consistent supplier of product at a reasonable price. And that has been a real highlight of this year, because you can see the growth across South Korea, China, the US, and Japan, and they've all performed really well, particularly South Korea, China and the US, exceptional results. And it really highlights, you know, when we compete head on with the US in those major markets, that I think the first thing is just this rapid decline in availability of US beef for export into those locations. But also particularly relevant for China is this spat the US and China are having in terms of plant access for export licenses into the Chinese market. Australia's grain-fed exports to China have lifted 55% in year-to-November numbers relative to 24 as an example of how significant that move has been. So we're shipping a lot of volume to China to fill the void left by the trade disputes and discrepancies that's happened in the US between those two major markets of ours. Great to see the major markets, the big four, are performing well. But I think it's also important to highlight the smaller markets, the more emerging ones is what I like to call them. And we're performing really admirably and really strongly in, you know, places like Thailand, Taiwan, Dubai, Singapore. Exports to the UK really continue to grow and perform really well. It's a lucrative market. We're seeing really solid performance there. It adds another string. All of these smaller markets add another string to Australia's really diversified portfolio of markets we ship to. And I think that's something which I've mentioned a couple of times is really important to remember is, yes, the big four account for, let's call it 80% of our exports, but we've got another 80 to 90 countries who we ship to that also demand our product. And that's a real positive in terms of a hedge and a risk mitigation strategy. To wrap up my views on how this year's gone, I think it's been a really, really good one. Yes, there's been challenges. We've had droughts, flooding, rains, fires right across the country. But I think overall, the supply chain and the market has performed really strongly. Prices have only improved since the beginning of this year. Yes, there's been profitability issues at times for different parts of the sector. But overall, I think everyone's generally made some money. And that, to me, is relatively unique. We should celebrate and appreciate that because it doesn't happen all the time. But, you know, I think it's fair to say everyone will end this year in a reasonably comfortable and pleased position. What I would remind us, though, is weather continues to dictate cattle prices in Australia. We can talk about global factors until we're blue in the face and how demand is such a driver of price performance here in Australia generally, but it doesn't have anywhere near as much as influences weather. And I think that's an important one to consider. And this year's really highlighted it. From March rain to middle of the year, really above average wet season, right through to a dry September, October and rain again, that has had such a major effect on how prices performed. Ultimately, it performed well anyway, but it is a good reminder for us. I think the sector is very well positioned for 2026. The fundamentals remain solid. Demand for our product is good, but watch the weather. Watch the weather north of Dubbo for the major cattle regions. I think that's something that's really going to come into focus next year. That wraps us up for 2025 and the podcast. I think I didn't have any expectations when I started doing this in January. We just wanted to get some market information in the hands of the beef industry and share some information we thought might be valuable. But it's really surprised me in terms of the reception we've received from the marketplace, how much the listenership has grown and the feedback I've received. I'm really grateful for the support I've had this year and it's really encouraged us as a business and a desk to really push on with it. Internally, to the StoneX support team in Singapore, London and Chicago, who put the podcast together every fortnight, Serena, Wenny, Raytheon and Andrew, your work doesn't go unnoticed. I really appreciate your efforts and all you do behind the scenes, which isn't seen. We're going to release the first episode of next year on Friday, the 16th of January. I'm going to get into the first fortnight of markets, specifically really look at the wiener sales and see how they're tracking. I'm really excited for 2026. It's going to be a really big year for us, both the podcast and the broader StoneX Meats and Livestock Australia desk. So I'm really looking forward to getting on the journey with everyone on that front. Feel free to share this and keep sharing it with your mates. I hope it creates some spicy conversation over the Christmas break. But to all of you that have tuned in, I'm wishing you a very Merry Christmas, a safe and happy new year. Enjoy your time with friends and family, some rest, and we look forward to seeing you in 2026. Cheers.